Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Main Street Universe.
That was Daniel Michael.
Thank you.
I've been inviting him to come up with a title for his show, but his music, but he's still working on it. Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay, and hello and welcome everybody, as I put my guitar down, to Main Street Universe, reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And today we do have a guest with us, and I would like to start off with a very brief monologue and then lead into our guests. And throughout most of history, the people of Iran knew Iran as Iran. And for centuries, it was referred to as Persia, Pars or Fars, a province in southern Iran, much due to the writings of Greek historians. In 1935, the government specified that it should be called Iran. However, in 1949, they allowed both names to be used. Most people associate Iran with its war in Iraq or its importance as one of the major oil-producing nations. But for more than 3,000 years, Persia, Iran, was a melting pot of civilizations and demographic movements between Asia and Europe. And that will bring me to my guest, physicist, and someone interested in Iranian-Persian history. Here is our guest, Bahram. And hello, Bahram.
Hello, and thank you for having me in your show.
Sure, sure. And I'll first like to start off just saying, tell us something about yourself, your own background.
I'm from Iran, and I'm a physicist by training. And in Iran, we always had pagan traditions, and I would be glad to talk to you about it.
Sure. And going back to pagan history, I think when most people who have done any kind of theological research in Iran, a lot of times the first name that might come up is Zoroaster, or Zoroastrianism, if I'm saying that right.
Yes. Well, actually, let me explain that the word Iran is derived from the word Arya. And these are the Aryan or Indo-European people who settled in the land that's basically from China to Ireland all the way. Mm. They came and settled in India, Iran, and then southern Europe all the way to Ireland. And they call them by Aryans or Indo-Europeans, and the word Iran is derived from the word Arya, meaning land of the Aryans.
Ah.
So that's also called, that area between China and Mediterranean is called the Iranian Plateau.
Okay.
And at one point, one group of them, that were the Parsis, or as the Greeks called them, Persians, took over and made an empire. That's why the Greeks called them Persia and Persians. But for us, it was always Iran.
Right.
Because Persians are one of the Aryans. And there are other nationalities under the umbrella of Iranian that, for instance, Kurds, for instance, Baluchis, and other groups, Gilanis, they all are different nationalities under the umbrella of Iran. And yet the Persians were the ones that were most dominant, and they took over and they made this big empire. And the Persian language, as we speak it today, is the most dominant language, and is the central government uses that.
Hmm. And going back to
the religions,
theological history,
yes.
Again, people think.
The Aryans were very much into solar calendar.
Mm.
And so therefore, they came up with celebrating the solstices and the equinoxes. This helped them with their agriculture lifestyle, and they could predict the seasons. Therefore, they could plan for it.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, Iranians became astronomers, and they actually developed the solar calendar exactly.
Ah.
So, therefore, at one point when, as you were saying, there was Zoroastrian.
Yes.
That Zoroastrian believe in Ahura Mazda as their main god. And they also have a duality, which is basically they also have a Ahriman, that's the equivalent of the devil.
Mm.
So they have the good force and the bad force,
yes,
fighting each other. And Zoroastrians would pray in front of fire, and at their temples they always have fire burning. And Iran, luckily, had many sources that natural gas comes out, and they could have fire burning eternally
all the time.
For free.
Naturally.
Naturally. So a lot of these temples were built on those natural sites.
Oh, wow.
And so, therefore, fire, and then the sun became important because they became symbols of purity.
Okay.
And darkness was a symbol of the devil and the, ugliness.
Right.
So, and after, the first Persian Empire that was formed by Cyrus the Great, actually, 2,500 years ago,
mm.
he established the empire. And it happened by him conquering Babylon. And Babylon was the Semitic government that existed before the Aryans came. The Aryans came from the north,
mm-hmm.
and then they clashed with the settlers who were there already in the Iranian plateau, who were mostly Semitic, and there were Babylonians, Sumerians, and Sumerians invented the alphabet. So Iranians took over their land and then got many things from them, including the alphabet from the Sumerians.
Oh, okay.
And so... But there, and of course they got some traditions from them also. But basically, this attention to fire and then the sun was the Aryan innovation in this region. And after Zoroastrian religion, or Zarathustra, as it's called, then they became Mithraists. Mithra is sun, or the sun god. And. The mythology of Mithra is that it is born on winter solstice because that's the longest night,
right.
and shortest day.
Yes.
Therefore, they said this is the baby sun coming.
Exactly.
So the mythology was that it was born on winter solstice, and the mythology was that it was a virgin birth from goddess Anahita.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Now, I think you can all... see where this mythology ended.
Where it's going.
Where it's yeah. going. Because this was the religion of all these Aryan people from Iran, Greece, and Rome. They all shared this because they were all neighbors. They're basically cousins. That's another thing the people might not know, because usually here, when you take history, they always talk to you about Rome and Greece.
Right, right.
They forget the other cousins that were the Iranians.
Yes.
You know.
That were, for so long,
yes.
like I mentioned in the monologue very briefly, you know, a few thousand years were considered like a jewel of the world and
mm-hmm.
a multicultural place full of culture and science and all these other things. But go on.
They were very much similar. They were very related. I mean, there are even stories that Alexander and Darius were probably... brothers, they had probably the same father. They shared many things. And so basically, culturally, they're very close. And as I said, at this point, and then, of course, because of rivalry, they had many wars. I mean, you know, Alexander attacked Iran, and it was like over a woman. You know, there was like rivalry. And so then they shared many customs and architecture. If you look at Persepolis, you see columns, and then you go to Parthenon, you see columns, very similar shaped. But again, you know, they were always being affecting each other. Iranian Empire had three capitals. One was Persepolis, the other one was Sardis, that's in Anatolia.
Right.
And you look at these ruins, you see so many similarities. So then the religion was also shared, the religion of Mithraism, or the sun god, worshipping the sun as the main god. And Mithra, or sun, has a statue left in British Museum, where Mithra is has a dagger, is holding a bull, and has a dagger is about to sacrifice this bull. The sacrifice of bull was a big tradition for Mithras, and baptism in the blood of bull.
Ah.
So now you see all these things I'm telling you, you see where ended up. Baptism in the blood of bull. And so when Constantine decides, the Roman emperor, decides to become Christian, they come up with this dilemma that they had no celebrations about Jesus.
Hmm.
So, but they all had all these ceremonies and celebrations from Mithra. Mithraism, as I said, was celebrated on the solstice, December, winter solstice, December 21st.
Yes.
And which, by the way, in the Iranian months, that's the beginning of months, actually. It's not the middle.
Oh, okay.
Because the Iranian calendar is the astrological calendar. It starts with the first of Aries. And that's the spring equinox. And the equinox and solstice were celebrated because they each start the season exactly at the first of the month. And so the mythology was that Mithra was born on winter solstice and would go to sky on spring equinox. And now you see where all these things ended up. So Constantine said, okay, let's just swap the word sun or Mithra to a new sun, Jesus.
Wow.
And therefore, winter solstice became Christmas, and the Iranian New Year in spring equinox became Easter. And therefore, this was just totally adopted like that. And many other things from Mithras were adopted by basically Catholic church. The Mithras priests wore red. No, the Catholic priests wear red.
Oh, wow.
The handshake was introduced by the Mithras because the Romans had this hand salute, like, you know, Mussolini, or you would see the Hitler Nazis.
Right, right.
But Mithras introduced handshake. And baptism in the blood of bull became baptism in the blood of Christ.
Wow, that's interesting.
And still this bullfight in Spain and the sacrifice of bull that happens is a reminder of that. And in India, they still do bull sacrifice every year. And because they're a vegetarian, they just bury them. But they still do it. 30,000 bulls are killed every year.
That's interesting to think that such a vegetarian, you know, the Hindu diet and all that, that they would sacrifice. I did not know about them sacrificing bulls like that. And one point I wanted to make briefly, and then let you go on, was when you mentioned the virgin birth, that creation story, the sun changing from being the son of, you know, the Mithra son to the Christ, is I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about the commonalities of creation story between pagan and Christian. Like in the tradition I'm in, it's, you know, the goddess separated from sort of light matter and became physical matter, became the god, again became, and they used the sun or the sky. And I think Native Americans say father of the sky as well, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's a kind of a comparison that you were bringing around full circle there with these creation stories and then having the sun be the male aspect. Mm-hmm. And but go ahead.
Yeah. But what is interesting is that in Greece and Rome, they did this fusion between Mithraism and Christianity. So as today in Italy or Greece, there is no mention of Mithra. It's all Jesus, and they celebrate, you know, Easter and Christmas. And they don't have any mention of, like, you know, Zeus or any of the old stuff. But in Iran, the pagan tradition stayed intact. It did not get mixed up with Islam or anything else.
Hmm.
See, the Islamic government in Iran right now, and they have, you know, some Islamic holidays. But they tried to suppress the pagan holidays, but they couldn't. So the pagan holidays are still the most dominant holidays in Iran. The biggest holiday of Iran is the Iranian New Year at the spring equinox.
Huh.
And because Iranians became the astronomers and could actually develop scientifically the solar calendar, it is the most scientifically celebrated New Year in the world. I mean, this was very interesting for me as a physicist.
Yeah,
because it's exactly predicted and celebrated at the moment that the Earth passes the moment of the equinox.
Mm.
There is a moment of equinox where day and night are exactly equal, and that's predicted to the second. So you set up a table and you make the countdown to that very second that the Earth passes. It's not 12 midnight. It's
right.
Every year is different.
It's when it happens
exactly.
That year. Oh, wow.
When it happens that year, and it's the same time all over the world at the same moment. The same moment.
So it's a truly shared moment.
Truly shared moment. You can have phones open or Skype and talk to your all your relatives at the same time, observing the Iranian New Year at the exact time, at the moment of the... And then you should go back and look at these buildings, like the Stonehenge buildings that are in Ireland.
Yes.
And you see that they have done it such a way that at that moment, the sun rays pass through a point. They have made a special hole that it marks the equinox. So they knew that when to celebrate it that way for years.
And as a physicist, that must be fascinating that ancient people had that little piece of ancient technology figured out, you know. And as well as that, going back to the holidays, so you say that the two main ones are winter, summer solstice, or spring equinox.
Yes.
And are there other, like, lesser pagan holidays that in Iran
well,
that survive?
Well, as I said, all the solstices and equinoxes are celebrated. So there is the summer solstice also celebrated, and the autumn equinox also celebrated. Autumn equinox basically is what makes in Europe Oktoberfest.
Oh, okay.
So that's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
It's a celebration of harvest. And so it's celebrated... exactly on those days, and there are different traditions. I mean, for instance, for the winter solstice, the tradition is to stay up all night because it's the longest night, and you're supposed to eat pomegranates and watermelon.
Oh, wow.
And the nuts and storytelling. Yeah. As you know, pomegranates, these are original Iranian fruits. Pomegranate came from Iran.
Oh, wow.
And people still do it, you know. And then at that time, the old times, they did not have the leap year concept, which later on Iranians, as I said, developed the calendar, made it exact.
Yes.
So before the leap year was established, Iranians had 12 months of 30 days each.
Mm.
So that gives you 360 days. So you're left with 5 days at the end of the year.
Yes.
They believed those 5 days did not belong to any month. And those were the 5 days that the spirit of the dead would come back to visit the earth. And so they would make fires to light up their path, to help them come, and to make them happy. So there is that tradition that's very similar to Halloween going on the last Wednesday of the Iranian year in March.
Mm.
Which is very similar to Halloween. There would be trick-or-treating. There would be people disguised because they would come and knock on doors. And so this is like the night of the dead, basically. You see that, you know, it is celebrated as Halloween in a pagan way. Then the Catholic Church also has it as the night of the dead.
Yeah, All Souls Day, All Saints
Day. So,
and the pagans would call it Samhain or whatever.
Right.
And, but it all, still a lot of this coming from Persia or Iran, of course, as they have always known it.
Yeah.
And I think that's very interesting how much comes from there. Like, for instance, I didn't know about the pomegranate came from Iran either.
Yes, and now it has been discovered here, and you see it everywhere.
Yes.
But
and I love pomegranate. I like pomegranate juice a lot.
Yes.
And going back to these holidays again, you said the government sort of failed in its attempts to suppress these holidays.
Yes.
So
especially this new government, which is very religious, theocratic, Islamic, they really didn't want these pagan holidays that they, you know, consider blasphemous or pagan. So they tried to make it, but then this is a way for people to show their opposition to the government. So they even celebrated even more. So, for instance, on that Halloween night that I mentioned, the last Wednesday of the year, so that's, you light fire, you know, the original is that you light fire to guide the spirit. But that turned into modern-day firework night.
Ah,
and so
yeah.
People, young and kids, you know, would go crazy doing all kinds of fireworks that night. And they even do it even more when the government banned it. The government said it's for safety, we banned these fireworks. But they do it even more. They, like, even explode bombs or things.
But they're not doing it for safety. They're doing it to suppress the holiday is what they're really doing.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So, and then they try to always have some kind of event. They create some kind of religious event to happen at the same time. That's another trick they do to suppress the pagan celebration. But still, they have never been able to suppress them. And as I said, the biggest Iranian holiday, which is official, and schools are out for 2 weeks, you know, is the Iranian New Year. I mean, that's officially holiday. You know, it's not an illegal holiday. It's legal. And so that, they cannot change that because it's so entrenched in the culture.
Yes.
That, you know, and that's, as I said, the beginning of spring. And it's the beginning of the astrological calendar. If you look at that, it's the first day of Aries.
Yes.
And it's March 20th. Another proof of what I was telling you, that this was the new year in Roman times. If you look at the Roman months, the meaning of them in Latin, September in Latin means seventh month.
Mm-hmm.
October in Latin means eighth. November means ninth. December, deca, means tenth.
Yes.
So if you see, that means they're counting from March, not from January.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
So
this
deca being ten.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
So that's another proof that this was also the calendar in Rome.
Yeah.
And the new year was in March. So, there's your
yeah, that's
proof.
That's an interesting point to look at as far as the way the months go and their Latin equivalent. And you mentioned some recent, you know, or modern things. I remember hearing a story recently, and actually Rune brought this up to me, about there were recently some government aides charged with trying to summon genies and witchcraft recently that were punished in Iran. I don't know if you heard about that story or not.
About that.
Oh, he was just mentioning, somebody brought that to my attention. So I guess it's still trying not to go away, you know, in some aspects. But it's interesting to me that it's still celebrated, you know, in a country that, especially to a Westerner, a lot of Westerners, when you think Iran, they really think of a strict, you know, harsh Muslim, dictatorship. And even though I'm not saying all Muslims, I know many peaceful Muslims, I'm just saying, and to think that a pagan holiday or a solstice holiday is 2 weeks off of school, that's a pretty, something I'm sure a lot of Westerners, including myself, did not know.
I always actually mentioned that to Greeks and Italians, that, well, look, guys, I mean, what happened to Zeus and all those things? I mean, we still celebrate our old gods and things. And you guys are totally Christian. I mean, I always mention it to them.
Yes.
That, you know, we have kept this thing up. And as you mentioned, a lot of people associate Iran with the other countries of the Middle East.
Yeah.
They don't see this difference, that Iranians are actually a different race. We speak Persian. The rest of these countries speak Arabic. We are not Arabs.
Yeah.
That's another distinction. Many of them did not speak Arabic from the beginning. After the Arabs attacked, they managed to change their language. For instance, in Egypt and Syria and Lebanon, they spoke another language. There were Phoenicians in Syria and Lebanon, and they were speaking Egyptian in Egypt. But the Arabs forced Arabic to them. They tried that in Iran also, but Iran has such a strong literature background, and they resisted it, and that's why we still speak Persian. And as I mentioned, we have more history of Persian and Iranian culture. As I said, Cyrus established Iran 2,500 years ago.
Yeah.
And Aryans came much longer before that. We think something like maybe 10,000.
Yeah.
But Islam is only 1,400 years. So people need to look at this perspective of time. So if you take Islam out of Iran, Iran is still intact with a lot of heritage.
With a lot of culture.
But in some other places, for instance, Pakistan, which is an entity defined with Islam, you take Islam out of Pakistan, it becomes India.
Yeah.
Because that's it's an entity that defined with that religion. So therefore, it's easy for Iranians to totally get rid of this. And as a symbol of opposition, a lot of the youth hang on their necklaces the image of Ahura Mazda, which is a man with wings. And we have these symbols.
Yes.
And people use that just to show their opposition. And for
that's great. I love a little bit of rebellion.
I've seen it a little bit in Scandinavia where the youth hang the hammer of Thor.
Yes.
Which is also a good pagan thing. But
yes.
The other places, you know, you see crosses. And so then this opposition to the Iranian government by hanging the Ahura Mazda symbol is one of the things that the neighboring countries that are Muslim and Arab, they criticize about Iranians. Like, for instance, Saddam Hussein used to call Iranians Horse Majus. Horse meaning Persian, and Majus means Magi.
Right, right.
Which they called, you know, infidel Iranians. That's how the Arabs, when they attacked Iran, they called Iranians infidel Magi, Majus.
For being
right.
Old, having the old pagan
having
thing.
Pagan
or
being,
the old, winged man thing and all of that.
Yes, yes, and fire.
Yes.
They say they worship fire. Well, they didn't worship fire. Fire was a symbol of purity. I mean, it was...
They can always twist things. Just like when a lot of pagans have an idol of any kind, they're not worshiping the statue.
Exactly.
The statue is just something...
It's a symbol.
It's a symbol to put them in a state of mind to whatever they're trying to get done according to that belief system.
Yeah.
And the Ahura Mazda, I did run across that in my research. I was interested to find that it was a mixture. I thought the Zoroastrianism, you call it a different name, Zarathustra
is the Western name. I mean, like, you see it in Das Sprach Zarathustra. Nietzsche wrote this book. And then there's a music piece by Strauss, Das Spoke Zarathustra, the theme to the 2001 Space Odyssey. That's called that's Sprach Zarathustra.
There we go. Back to the beginning again to the end again.
Europeans call it Zarathustra. We call it Zarathustra. So it's the same guy.
And
which we know actually his birthday. We don't know the birth year. That's another thing. Oh, by the way, of all these, I think all of the people in the Bible are mythical characters. There's really no historical proof of them, but there is historical proof of Zarathustra who existed. They have his birthday, they don't have his year, and these other people who came later on. I think it's interesting that, for instance, Muhammad came and said, okay, this is the Bible, and I'm also following them. This guy was really historical figure.
Yes.
But the others were not, but he based his preach over that mythology. So that's interesting.
and my point, I was going to say, when you talked about how the one is a real figure, or at least most people think he's a real figure, Zoroaster. Do you think maybe later on the Christian Bible was just sort of written as a collection of stories that were just having its origins in that, because there's so many similarities?
Yes, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because many say that this duality concept that was introduced by Zarathustra later on was adopted by the Bible. Because in the Old Testament, I mean, the Jewish tradition does not talk about a bad guy, a bad God. But Christianity does. Christianity
yes.
talks about the good and evil.
Yes.
This duality, they say, was introduced by Zarathustra into the Bible because the contact that was made when Cyrus invaded Babylon, he rescued Jews from Babylon, and somehow I think that philosophy got transferred. So the duality of the good and evil, and therefore heaven and hell,
yes.
is for the first time introduced, because
yeah.
the old Jewish mythology does not talk about the hell.
No.
They talk about... Yeah, so this is what they say was introduced.
And I agree, and that's the difference between the old pagan systems.
Mm-hmm.
Zoroaster brought the duality, though he combined some of these things, like, or some people say,
yeah.
some people would say they would call Zoroaster's followers, they would call them magi, or workers
yes.
of magic, or astronomers, or astrologers.
Yes,
and
yes,
I want to
yes.
use a biblical example that I came up with.
Right.
And where they use this word, they call it magi, some people say magi,
yes.
Or magus in Greek.
Yes, yes.
And it's Matthew's, Gospel of Matthew,
uh-huh.
For the birth of Christ. It says, Herod, then King Herod,
yeah.
called the magi secretly,
yeah.
and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. Going on in 8, he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I may go and worship him. So this is King Herod basically sending out 3 wise men, 3 magic users,
yes,
you could
yes.
say 3 witches,
yes.
to go find what could be the most important
yes.
event in human history, if it,
right.
and if it's a real person, so that he could go worship
mm-hmm,
him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this mix of the duality of Zoroaster.
Yes.
With a little bit of paganism or a little bit of magic using, or what people might call it that back then, alchemy, whatever words people are comfortable with.
Yes.
And so there's this mix. But then as Christianity comes along, it really becomes about, okay, the Catholic Church goes, and around the 10th century,
right.
the Catholics started coming in with Reconquista and stuff. We'll talk about those things a little later. Mm-hmm. But they started saying, no, we're going to dish out what divine knowledge is.
Mm-hmm.
But there was still this idea of people using a bit of magic in it, even though there was the duality, if you get what I mean.
Yes, yes. And as you saw, notice the semantics, you know, the word star, it comes from the Persian word setare, meaning star, and then, you know, the word disaster today is also from that, a bad star.
Disaster. Oh.
Yeah, a bad star.
Bad star.
Yeah, so a lot of astronomy and astrology were one at that one point, and it all originated a lot of it in Iran, and later on, you know, astronomy became science, and astrology became superstition. So,
Now, I believe you can still mix science and spirituality. But I know you're an atheist, so we're not going to get into the debate. But it is a fascinating how their histories mix, is it not? And but go back to the word again.
Uh-huh.
Is that the Persian, or I'm saying Persian now, Iranian word?
The language is actually Persian.
Oh, okay, the Persian word, disaster.
Star is setare. Setare is star.
So what would be the actual bad star in Persian, if you remember?
Well, bad is actually a Persian word.
I got you. So you combine setare.
But disaster, that's where it came in English.
Gotcha.
It's from that.
I see the connection. I'm fascinated by etymological things and in word history. I think sometimes just studying simple word history, it can be a interesting thing. Just like when they say to write is to spell, or, you know, you're casting a spell, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, by studying the semantics also, you can see the roots of a lot of this historical, like, for instance, paradise came from the Persian word pardis.
Ah.
So a lot of this, you know, the narrative comes from the sources that in Iran.
Yeah.
And, you know, many sciences started there at the same time.
And another interesting thing about word history is taking it through, just like we just did, you know, taking it through the Bible and then all the way back to Persia again.
Yes.
And also into, you know, other places where people draw from based on wars, conquering. And again, what you said before I thought was a very interesting point that I didn't comment on yet, was when you mentioned how many people associate Iran and think Arabic.
Right.
They think Middle Eastern.
Right.
Where Iran is a very especially at certain times in history, was an extremely mixed culture of, you know, people from all over the place, and science and art and all different sorts of things coming from all over the known empires of the world at the time.
Yes.
And it reminds me also of those great buildings in Persepolis.
Yes.
Right? That was the, am I saying this right? Was it the
Achaemenid
okay.
Yes, yes.
Empire,
yes.
Where these great buildings came about. If you've ever seen one of those shows like what's that one called? IMAX, that thing with the giant screen, and they show these beautiful palaces over there.
Yes, there were innovators in many concepts that we have today. For instance, the concept of tax, the concept of mail system.
Ah.
These are all concepts of running in a country, running an empire. Because if you know that the Greeks and Romans had city civilization, city. Like Rome was a city that became big.
Yeah.
And then the Greeks were also a city. There were Athens, you know, Sparta. You know, but Iranians were the first to make an empire, in a sense, to run a country. And they had three capitals. So they had the whole system of running a country. And they had mail system. They had tax system.
Mm.
So these are all their innovations.
Yeah,
that they introduced. That's why a lot of, you know, what we know today comes from that area, that time. And as you were saying, Iranians, see, this is a European-centric way of looking at history that is taught in the West.
Yeah.
That they sort of have defined Europe up to after Greece. It ends with Greece.
Yes.
And they don't even, so they made this big separation. And as though, like, the rest of them are, well, I mean, they use the terms that Romans were using, barbarian, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To other people. And that has stuck. That still today, you know, you see that European Union does not allow Turkey to join.
Mm.
A lot of, whereas Greece is there. It's this concept of it's Eurocentrism that they use.
I understand that. And we're all, in some way, even though those of us that want to be enlightened, you know what I mean, you realize, you're like, wow, you know what? I did look at it that way. You know what I mean? And then something opens your eyes and opens the door. And it's something in our psyche that has to be worked on. You know, to be worked on. That, yes, there were amazing philosophers that came out of Greece. You know, Pythagoras is the first one that comes to mind. But he didn't come out of nowhere.
Right.
He drew from older sources.
Exactly. I mean, somehow, because they separate, that connected land in the European description becomes Asia. So it's not Europe. So therefore, okay, it's not relevant. Yeah. But if you take away that definition, well, Greece is attached to Iran. I mean,
it's right there.
You know, and things. I mean, when I go to Greece, I totally blend in. I cannot tell someone a Greek from a Persian.
Right.
The food is the same, culture is the same, people are the same.
Yep.
Yet Hollywood makes this film called 300. In that film, all the Greeks are these white people, blonde, and all the Persians are black. Somehow, I don't know where they get this concept. And it's, you can see that it's totally demonization of anybody from outside this European defined continent.
Yeah.
And so this whole thing is going on. I mean, British Empire had a lot to do with it because they started these terms that, okay, we are the center of the world, so this is Near East. East of us is East, and west of us is West. There is our Near East, there is our Middle East, and there is our Far East.
Far East, way like, out there.
Yeah, yeah. And these terms are still used as though they are like, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I say Middle East sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We all do.
That's European centrism and what they call Orientalism. And, you know, they have a whole, that still continues. The way they look at countries is, oh, you're all Middle East. That adds, you know, I still have to explain people that, you know, We are not Arabs. We don't speak Arabic. There is snow in Iran. There is a lot of misconceptions. They think we have camels, riding camels. It's a very strange.
And I've seen, it was funny because I've seen some footage from Iran from some of the students there. And for a lot of Westerners that don't pay attention to these things, these kids are amazingly sophisticated.
Yeah.
And you know, it's and they're carrying their little cell phones around and they're, you know.
Yeah.
And and they speak multiple languages.
Yes.
Which I wish I'm working on learning Spanish right now. It's difficult as an adult to learn a second language. It really is.
Yeah.
Here's
the plugs.
Let me plug my co-host here. Kevin's been a little quiet today.
Mm-hmm.
He is an intuitive consultant, psychic medium Kevin Baird. You can find him at www.templeofgaia.com. He also is at stores Crystalis in Herndon, as well as Sticks and Stones in Fairfax, Virginia. So you can see him there. Do you know what days you're at Sticks and Stones? Somebody was asking
Tuesdays
me.
Tuesdays for Sticks and on and off for Crystalis the rest of the week.
Okay, Tuesdays he is at Sticks and Stones and sort of on and off at Crystalis. But you can find him at www.templeofgaia.com. And if you want to contact Bahram, it's bahram@bahram.net. And he is a scientist, physicist, and has an interest in history and culture. And we will get back to that. And speaking of certain perceptions, whether they be Eurocentric or whether they be Christocentric or Islamocentric, how they view other religions, is a funny thing to study, because people begin to start from a position of this is what the actual truth is, and this is what everybody else is. But we'll give you a little name or something, or we'll give you maybe even a day. I even remember when George Bush, I think it was a debate over recognition for some pagan practice, and he says, "Well, I refuse to acknowledge flying on broomsticks as being a religion." So he's just coming from, you know, Anton LaVey, a Satanist can have a church, but some pagan practice can't. You know what I mean? And so whatever that issue was at the time, but I remember it's the quote I remember that's relative to the conversation. But following, you know, whoever is fine, but another not. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
And Hollywood takes over. Where there is a lack of information or misinformation. Like, a lot of people here get their history, geography lessons from Hollywood. Because, well, first of all, there is no Ministry of Culture here. I mean, so there is no, well, that's because it would be considered censorship if anybody would comment on the context of any content of any films.
Yeah.
So Hollywood gets away with anything they want to present as history. And people...
Well, I'm for choice. I'm just for making a good choice.
Right, right.
Because if you consider... I mean, would you want Jerry Falwell on the Minister of Culture? You know what I mean?
No. But
if
I'm saying, on the
like
other
that.
Hand, you know, films like 300, you know, are made, and a lot of people think that, well, the Greeks are white and the Iranians are black.
And that is a funny thing. And apparently, they all spend a lot of time in the gym.
Then you're talking about this. You know, what you call other people. This is all the tradition of what you call others, especially your neighbors. You call them derogatory bad names. Like, Romans called everybody else barbarian, because if they didn't speak their language, they thought they were mute. So they said, oh, they just say bar.
That
term became barbarian, and it got stuck on the Berbers in North Africa. That actually, they were Carthage Empire, North Africa, but because the Romans didn't like them and they were fighting them, they called them Berber, and their names. And today, the native language of North Africa, they say it's Berber.
Oh, wow.
So they even,
we have two callers.
Oh, wow. We have a couple callers. Let's go ahead and take somebody.
Area code 734.
Hello. You're on Main Street Universe.
Hi, this is Rune.
Hey, Rune, how are you doing today?
Doing good. It's been a fascinating show.
Oh, good, good.
So I'm actually really interested that a lot of these practices are still going on in Iran, especially like I mentioned Sparrow with the aides to the president being charged with witchcraft.
Okay.
And it just makes an interesting fact that these practices have been able to survive and in some ways thrive in that area.
Right. As Bahram was saying, the holidays still survived, they still thrived, and 2 weeks off of school, I thought that was an interesting point as well, for a solstice holiday. Now, you hadn't heard, did you hear about the guys being charged? He hadn't heard about that specific case.
Right. It was back in May, as I understand it. I don't know what has happened since then because, well, word seems to have not come out. But it was just a big stink that was made around May that top aides to the president were practicing witchcraft and summoning genies, which I would assume would be more djinns.
Yeah, old King Solomon Day stuff.
as far as it goes.
And, well, that's good. I'm glad I saw you were tuning in. That's great. And Rune is a regular supporter of the show. And you said there was another caller as well?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Rune, we're going to try to take another caller here.
All right.
Can they both stay on?
I think so.
Okay, we think we can both stay on. So we're going to give this a try, folks. Hello. You're
greetings.
On Main Street Universe.
Greetings.
Para?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes.
Do you have a question for Bahram?
Well, what's so interesting is sharing Eastern versus Western, basically philosophy and understanding of life.
Mm.
You know, the ancestors from the Eastern perspective saw, as you said, the things from what you would say the dualities, also called the laws of the opposites, because everything in life is about dualities. All of the religious concepts, even those today that are practiced. If you look at all of their symbols, they're all designed based off the laws of the opposites. You have the Ankh, which is the key of life, male and female, the female loop, the male penis. You have yin and yang. You have the so-called Star of David or the double pyramid, which is heaven and earth. You have the crescent. You have the crescent, moon, and star, which is masculine, feminine. You have the swastika. You know, which is Hindu, you know. So you have all of these things, you know, the cross or the crux on Santa is ancient Egyptian, ancient Kemetic. Folks think it was started with Christianity, but it represented the horizon of the earth and a penetrating rays of the sun. So all of these factors, you know, our ancestors knew that, you know, there were, as far as what's called the duality, the laws of the opposites, and developed their cultures to make sure that it's coinciding with natural law.
Yes, and I agree that there is those things, but I also think it doesn't mean that there has to be absolutism. That doesn't mean it has to be absolute black. I think so much truth lies in the gray areas and the exploration within these dualities, what you're saying in a natural way.
Well, see, even when you say that, you still have to look at it from the standpoint it is either plus or minus.
In some direction, yeah.
Because when you say that that it's a zero or a cipher, then it's going nowhere, and that's not how life is. You know, that's another discussion.
There should always be movement.
But the laws of the opposite applies to all things, and again, that's how our ancestors had to put the laws in place. Another case in point, the double square. You know, you have the square being air, fire, earth, and water. And you have the qualities of nature, hot, cold, wet, dry. And we are, in the ancient concept, we are in the center of the square because all those parts represent us and we represent it, which makes us gods ourselves. But that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah, you're in a discussion with pagans and atheists here, so we could really make that one last for a couple of shows.
That could last all day if we're not careful.
And what was your name again, or online name, whichever you're comfortable with, sir?
My name is Akpara.
Akpara, okay. Well, and thank you very much, by the way, for your input, and thank you for listening and calling Main Street Universe.
Thank you.
Bahram?
Yes?
I also wanted to mention there's an announcement I would like to make. There's a play coming up here Andalusian treasures. And I'll announce this. I think I pronounced it right this time. And this is an interesting festival, and I'll read about it right here. Our 29th celebration of the winter solstice begins over 1,000 years ago amid the confluence of Moorish, Sephardic, and other Iberian cultures in medieval Andalusia. It's December 9th through 11th at G.W. Lisner Auditorium, 21st and 8th Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. And this festival is kind of interesting because it's the three different religions, Jewish, Muslim, and Christian, during this one particular time in history, celebrating, which is basically a pagan holiday, and sort of doing so in peace. And it was, I just thought that was kind of humorous, how it was a solstice pagan holiday that got these guys together and got them to enjoy themselves and have a party in peace. I will, though, to be fair, it was under Muslim rule that this was allowed to happen. And it was around the early 10th century that the Christians began what was to become Reconquista, reconquering Spain. This was in the Spanish Portugal, and now is known as Andorra, Iberian Peninsula area. So it's an interesting historical thing, and it's a show going on called Andalusian Treasures at the G.W. Lisner Auditorium.
Well, I wanted to make a comment about basically the solar calendar and the lunar calendar.
Mm-hmm.
They have no relations. Lunar events. Lunar is based on the lunar circle around the Earth.
Yes.
And it has no relation with solar, which is the motion of the Earth around the Sun. But Islamic and Jewish calendars are both lunar. I mean, so is the Chinese calendar. And you cannot really match it with the solar calendar.
Mm.
So in Islamic calendar, it totally is loose. It rotates all over the place. In Jewish calendar, somehow they have made a correction to fix it so that they always manage to have something near Christmas. I think that they always have Hanukkah near Christmas.
All this.
But in reality, there is no connection. And the way they calculate Easter in Christian is also a weird way of combining solar date of the spring equinox with a lunar event. That's also very hard. That's why Easter rotates, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
And then also the difference between the Orthodox Easter and the Catholic Easter. There's always some. That's what I was saying. Solar year is very accurate way to calculate a calendar. That's why most calendars that people are using are solar. And the Iranians were the ones who made it scientific. And later on, the leap year correction was introduced in Iran. Omar Khayyam actually was known for poetry. He was a mathematician. He developed the solar calendar. And later on, this went to Europe because in Europe they didn't know about leap year. And so one day, one mathematician that studied the solar calendar of Iran and told the Pope, look, we need to make a correction.
We have a leap year.
We have a problem, Houston. So he said, okay, correct it. He said, okay, now tomorrow should be like 15 years from now. And so they just jumped the year to make that correction. But when the news came to the Orthodox Pope, he said, oh, no, I'm not going to follow the Catholic Pope. So he just stayed that way. That's why there was that discrepancy between the Orthodox calendar and the Christian. So it's very interesting.
It is.
That these things.
And I love the fact that in the old, before they decided to do the quote-unquote correction, that there was 5 days of the dead before. Now, was that like a five-day party, or what happened? What did they do on those 5 days?
Well,
I remember you saying they lighting the paths, lighting the fires
and all
that.
Basically, they wanted that the dead to come and see that they are happy so they could go back in peace, you know.
Oh,
basically,
cool.
So that was the idea, that they would take food to the cemetery. They would eat food, you know, on the graves. They would.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that though. I like things
yeah.
when people aren't afraid of death.
Right.
From regardless of your position, because mm-hmm. you understand that it's part of the balance. Now you can view that differently religiously. An atheist would say, you know, I'm just moving on. A pagan would say, or a Hindu or somebody might say, you're going to another life, so don't be afraid.
Yeah.
However you look at it, I like the idea that it's considered natural, and I think you should not have your kids too scared of it either. When I was a kid, I remember the cartoon movie Watership Down.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, the main rabbit, I don't know if you remember that, but it was, I won't go into the story, we don't have enough time. But at the end, the main character lays down, and this little shadow version of him is about to come out. He's visited by the shadow rabbit. It was rabbits. I won't go into it. But anyway, it's treated really peacefully, even though it's like a cartoon that kids might watch. And he's like, you look a little tired. Why don't you come with me? You know, you kind of done what you needed to do. You know, and they treat it in this real peaceful way, and they just sort of hop off into the woods together. And I kind of liked how it was a children's thing that treated death in a peaceful, mature way. But anyway, I was rambling on. Go on.
So, yeah, here in this region, there are many celebrations. Already, University of Maryland Iranian Club had their winter solstice celebration last Saturday. I was there. And they're going to have their Spring Equinox Iran New Year program, I think, on March 10th.
Oh, cool.
So if people are interested, there are local events that they can go and see how people celebrate these things.
That would be great. Very interesting.
Iranian celebrations, yeah.
And I would like, and you said that was at the University of Maryland?
University of Maryland Iranian Student Club.
Iranian Student Club, okay.
Yes. The same thing also. GW has Iranian Student Club. George Mason has the most interesting program for their Spring Equinox Iran New Year program.
And that's right down the street here from.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's nice. And I would like to also plug once again my friend here, Kevin Barrett, who's silently our engineer today. He's psychic medium intuitive consultant. www.templeofgaia.com, and he also has some things to purchase. He has his Paranormal Windows, his Horizon Oracle deck at www.templeofgaia.com. He can also be found at Crystalis in Herndon, as well as Sticks and Stones on Tuesdays in Fairfax, Virginia. And it's getting to be we have about 2 minutes left. Let's make a brief closing statement. 90 seconds. Bahram, it was very nice to have you. Definitely very informative. I didn't have to talk too much today. That's a refreshing break.
Well, thanks for having me, and
yes.
Thanks for all those who listened to the program.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. It's very good having you.
My pleasure to be here.
And that's Bahram, a physicist, telling us today about pagan history and just Iranian/Persian and world history. And I'd also like to thank Rune Pagan. Are you still there? Oh, Rune hung up.
No,
and our,
there. I just turned his mic off.
Okay. was our other caller still there?
Rune's back.
Oh, Rune, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Hello, we're winding down here. I just wanted to thank you for calling again.
It was wonderful to have you, Braham. It was a wonderful study. Thank you for enlightening us.
Thank you.
And is our other caller still there, or did he? Okay, we have about 20-some seconds left, so it looks like we got to close out. Again, thank you, everybody, so much. Thank you, Rune, again, for calling. Sometimes our show is more open, and it's more about people calling and us all back and forth. Sometimes it's an informative guest. We do a lot. Remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined, and blessed be.
We took that one down to 3 seconds. I just want to make sure that the callers, I think, it's nice that they're supporting.